If you listen to this podcast and follow what we do at Troutbitten, then you're a thoughtful angler, and you don't accept the status quo simply because that's how it's always been done. Squall of Fishing designs and creates fly fishing apparel with this same philosophy. Squalla was started by a group of lifelong fly anglers who spent their careers working for some of the biggest names in the outdoor industry, and they understood that essential fly fishing apparel like waders, jackets, sun gear, and insulation could simply be better. So now, Squalla makes gear for us, the like-minded few, serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Check them out at squallafishing.com. Water is essential for life, but for Orvis, it's the blood of the brand. Orvis has been the leader in fly fishing since 1856. No other brand can match the explorative and innovative spirit they bring to the water today. Everything at Orvis is about inspiring and empowering adventure and wonder in nature. Rooted in the vitality of fly fishing, fueled by passion and curiosity for the outdoors, Orvis designs and develops products and experiences, providing the knowledge and expertise to enable more meaningful moments and connections in nature. With over a century and a half of experience in the field and on the water, Orvis seeks to ignite that passion in others. This is the Troutbitten Podcast.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Yeah, Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
It's about trout.
Wild trout.
This is Troutbitten.
This is the Troutbitten Podcast, and thanks for tuning in. I'm Dominic Swantoski, the owner of Troutbitten and the author of Troutbitten.com. Our topic this evening is living a fly fishing life and doing the hard things necessary to keep it. First, I want to quickly thank our show sponsors for this season: Orvis Fly Fishing, Avid Max, Precision Fly and Tackle, Fooling Mill, Smith Creek, Tactical Fly Fishing, Squalla, Freestone Coffee, and Grip Studs. That's quite a lineup. And your support of these companies is a primary driver that keeps things going. Use their provided discount codes and drop a line to these companies to thank them for supporting the Troutbitten Podcast. Great. So a fly fishing life, right? As a Troutbitten angler, that's what we're in it for. I've built Troutbitten not so much for the casual angler, but for the diehard, serious fisher who's dedicated to learning more and improving tactics. Because we recognize that it's the pursuit of these trout that takes us into some of the most amazing places on earth. Being Troutbitten is something that you can't shake off. Your mind is always churning over something tactical. Maybe it's a fresh spin on an old streamer retrieve, or you're daydreaming about the upstream reaches above the water that you fished last weekend when you fished all the way until dark before walking back out a mile and a half under the stars by yourself and full of the satisfaction that good exploration brings. And you know there's more to find, still miles of river toward those headwaters. So the questions and that allure taps you on the shoulder all week, reminding you of what's to come. The next fishing trip is something to look forward to, right? And that's the secret to happiness. Always something to look forward to, something to work on, something to improve, something to achieve in life. These are our life goals. And fly fishing for trout, like so many other great pursuits, gives our life a purpose just by giving us the next thing to look forward to and the next thing to work on. This is why we choose a fly fishing life. And this is Troutbitten. And I guess that most of our listeners probably wants the same. But here's the thing. There's a difference between wanting it and working for it. I think everyone imagines themselves deep into the middle of a sweetheart spot with no one else around, casting and fishing for big wild trout that are eating our flies and coming to hand. Maybe it's the rising trout at dusk or a frenzied streamer bite in the morning as you cover water quickly. Whatever your favorite river scenario, these are the idealized moments we imagine when we think of a fly fishing life. And of course, those moments are there for us. We get them, hopefully a lot. And yet, the amount of effort it requires to get there, the preparation, the planning, the failure and frustration, requires hard work to get through all of that and onto those best moments. Doing the hard things. That's what we're here to talk about tonight. No one snaps their fingers and becomes a great fisherman. It takes seasons of dedication. And for anyone who gets it, there's an inevitable appreciation for the process, for the work needed to catch fish. Fishing is, of course, not unique in this way. In my own life, I've found playing guitar and playing saxophone to require the same determination to get to the good parts. And I teach my little league teams to practice hard so they can make the important plays in the game. We're really doing the small things here with trout fishing too. Prepare, practice, and then get the payoff. I do think that it's a shock to some people that trout fishing can be so difficult, or that we like it to be difficult. Many people surely pick up fishing on a whim, thinking to just spend a few hours once in a while reeling in and landing fish. But when trout are the pursuit, especially wild ones, we quickly realize that it's one of those great things in life that are going to require more of us. And to get much of anywhere with trout on the fly, to live a fly fishing life, we have to do the hard things. And that's what we're here to talk about tonight. What are those hard things? How do we enjoy them? And what kinds of things are overlooked but seem to make a lot of difference? So I'm joined again by the Trout Bitten crew, Matt Grobe, Trevor Smith, Josh Darling, Austin Dando, and Bill Dell. My friends, how are you doing?
Hey, now.
Doing good.
I want to meet Young Love at the Sweetheart Spot.
You wish.
That's nice. Hold hands?
I think so. I think so.
I bet he knows some secrets at the Sweetheart Spot.
Is that what they call it?
If you whisper them.
Would you tie on the Trout Bitten Superfly if I meet you at the Sweetheart Spot?
Young Love, do you have any Sweetheart Spots?
Oh, sure. But they're private.
Sweetheart Creek.
Sweetheart Creek. I thought it was Matt's Creek.
Well, now we have a Sweetheart Creek.
Not when I'm there.
We'll talk about it.
Hey, Bill, we missed you last week because we were talking about being front-ended on the river and how to deal with it. I knew you'd have some good stories. Did you listen to that podcast?
I did. And listen to how I long are. I've been grobing my fish. And
grobing your fish out.
I had to roast you because you're grobing them out too much.
I know. Keeping me humble.
Hey, did Austin get that story right with the guys in the parking lot and
he was in a ballpark.
Okay. All right. Do you want to give us one of your worst experiences of being front-ended?
I guess I'll talk about the one that most recently happened to me that like infuriated me.
Okay.
This was during the COVID stuff and it was a stressful time. And so I got to the river at like 5:45 and all I wanted to do was just get in the river and fish. And so I fished the first spot. I caught a really nice fish out of. I was like, okay, I'm good. Took the picture, got back up, fished for like 5 minutes. And three guys came in and kind of did what Matt was saying that the five guys did to him is just kind of surrounded him.
Yeah.
And I got so mad. And I walked around them and the guy's like, oh, how's the morning going? And I just snapped. And I said, I was having a great morning until three blankety blanks cut me off. I could have cast and hit them like where they started to fish.
Yeah.
And so, well, the guy's like, well, I don't care. You can go around us and start fishing. And so I went around the top guy and started like 10 feet in front of him. And then do you ever fish mad and just start banging fish and just... I think I caught like 10 fish in about 15 minutes and was just mad. And just,
you dialed it in with anger.
Yeah, I dialed it in with anger.
Oh, anger dials me out. I can't catch fish when I'm mad or frustrated or distracted, you know? But, Josh, when the camera's on.
When the camera's on. That's starting to change.
That's true.
When that happens, Bill, moving forward, we're gonna call that the sweetheart hole. When you get crowded out by people that want to like
there
hold
you go.
Your hand.
Yeah, like when it. You get crowded, I like
right.
that.
I yep. like it.
The sweetheart hole. Yeah, I don't know. If I were to do it again, I would probably, like most times I just put my head down and I walk around and, you know, just kind of give a nasty glare, but I just was having a bad week and just, yeah, they got to be punching bags for me. So it wasn't a proud moment for me.
All you got to do is say, hey man, this isn't a sweetheart hole.
This isn't a sweetheart hole. That's right. Not a sweetheart hole.
If you're close enough to hold hands, you're too close. And it's a sweetheart hole.
It's a sweetheart hole.
He sweetheart holed me.
I like that a lot.
Is that your best way of dealing with it, Bill, is to just kind of walk around and just avoid it so you don't get angry? Well, anymore.
I have to. If I get cut off most times, I guess I get front-ended a lot because I fish
right.
so fast.
That's what we were saying. Yeah, we figured you did.
And right. so I'm just used to like, okay, you're going to step in front of me. So I'm either using like Austin's philosophy of, okay, I'm going to fish it really slow between me and that person. Hope maybe they'll, because a lot of times people will jump in and out. Like they'll jump in and fish for 10 minutes and then they'll hop back out. And I'm like, okay, then I'll keep fishing. Or I'll just say, okay, well, this section is going to get crowded and I'll walk back, hop in the car and head to another section of river or head to a less popular section.
Yeah, as we kind of talked about, there is obviously no perfect way to deal with it, but it's a thing out there, and we deal with it. Hey, we got good questions coming in, a bunch this week. Trevor, you want to read this, please?
Sure. This question comes from Matthew Wilson by way of email. Dom, I appreciate everything you guys do to help us struggling anglers learn. I love your podcasts, and I'm slowly working my way through your posts. Using your information, I've started to see what I think are great improvements in my game. I would like to hear your take on how you guys analyze your skill progression. Is it fly productivity? There seem to be a ton of different variables that change fishing conditions between each trip. I'm trying hard to hit the water at least 100 times this year, and I would love to know the best way to measure my progress.
An Excel spreadsheet, write it down and track it. If you're getting better numbers, then you're improving.
Do you track anything else, Bill, other than numbers?
I'll track hours fished. I started doing that this year. I used to track like conditions to say like, okay, if it's bright and sunny and I catch two fish, like, well, it's the conditions. And if I do that like, you know, five times in a row and it's really bright and sunny, then I might say, okay, it's the condition. It's not what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. I'll piggyback on that real quick. Just from, I do something similar. Not so much a spreadsheet, but a pretty detailed journal.
There's only one spreadsheet guy here.
There's only one spreadsheet guy. But
dear diary.
But that's in all seriousness, if you're serious about it, and there's no boastfulness involved in it, you're strictly doing it for tracking progress.
Right.
I find that having a clicker, my nickname's Numbers out here, but I bring out the clicker and I click every fish I catch at times.
Hey, like
when I'm really trying to focus on a skill, I look back at the journal and then I have my clicker and I do not fish total, I just do fish per hour. And that was an old trout bitten thing, Dom, that we used to do, right? Like I feel like we had a scale, right? 1 to 3 fish was slow. 3 to 5 fish was decent, 5 to 7 fish was good, and then anything 7+ per hour was great fishing. And so when we would ask each other, how is it out there today? It was pretty good. I knew I knew exactly where Dom was going with his with his catching. And so I think that's a good way to start tracking your progress. Like I said, not to boast, but to track. And if you want to seriously improve, that's hard data. Will be very beneficial to look back at to track your progress.
Nice.
Grobe, I remember the first time we fished together, you had an app on your phone that you used to track fish, but you also tracked the species. So like you'd say, I caught 50-50 rainbows and browns, 40-60 rainbows, browns. Do you still do that?
At times.
He caught 100 trout each time?
percentages.
Percentages.
It was percentages. And that was more for like I said, this goes into the discussion we'll have later. I mean, if you're taking it to a more serious level, it helped me from a historical standpoint, and I'll bring this up and elaborate later, but like, it's all part of progression. Like if you want to get serious about it, you can track it. And when you have 3 to 4 times, maybe 3 or 4 times a year to fish, like you can go back at that particular time of year and see kind of what was working and how many fish you caught and what flies you were using. And that's all part of building your fishy resume, as I'll call it.
resume. Anybody else?
Aside from counting fish, I know that I started to just do simple things like time how quickly I was switching rigs, you know, time how quickly I was changing leaders.
Mm, that matters too.
I would try to keep a somewhat accurate estimate on how much time is are my flies in the water each outing versus how much time am I spending tying flies on, changing rigs and that sort of thing. And, you know, ideally trying to get that as short as possible.
I like that.
A good indicator, like, I don't know, I fished one day last week when I was off and I missed a lot of fish. And so if you're missing fish, you're doing something wrong, meaning like probably something's off in your mechanics, whether you're not sticking the landing or you're leading too fast or something like that, that the fish, if the fish aren't comfortably eating your flies and they're kind of grabbing and swiping at it, you're probably doing something wrong technically that's causing you to miss those fish.
Mm-hmm. So most of you guys are talking about stats and numbers and time even, Josh. I did that, and I still do that once in a while. I actually did carry a clicker, like Matt. I kept a log, like you're talking about, Bill. And Josh, like you're saying, I actually used to time myself, not necessarily with knots, but I would give myself 10 minutes to fish one area. And I just had a watch just on my left hand. I just always be, I not always, but often, I'd say, hey, 10 minutes for this spot, and that's it, and then I'm moving on. And so I kept stats and I kept records. These days, what I kind of do is, I love that phrase from Sims that says, fish it well. That's it. When I fish well, I'm satisfied. Now, I think what Matthew is asking is, how do I know I've fished it well? You know, and what I'm going to say is, if you fish 100 days this year, which is a fantastic goal, you're going to start to really know, you know what? I fished that section well. And then you can confidently move on. One of the most common questions I get while I'm guiding is, hey, I never know how many, you know, drifts I should put in here, whether it's a dry fly or a streamer or a nymph. Once you did what you wanted to do in that lane, in that seam where you're trying to fish, great. Maybe repeat it if it's a great spot. Heck, maybe repeat it two or three times if it's the best spot around, and then feel confident. Hey, I did my job. I got the dead drift that I wanted to get. You know, it's easiest to see on a dry fly. You can look, dead drift, dead drift, dead drift, all the way downstream. Good, I did it. I gave the fish a chance to see it. Now, you can stand there and change things like angles and a little bit left, a little bit right. You could change the fly, of course. But once you know that you got what you wanted to see, for example, on that dry fly, a dead drift, there you go. You've fished it well. And for me, that's how I know my game is improving. When I can get to the end of a day and feel like, hey, I fished it well, and I mean this, that's the most rewarding thing to me. I might have caught 5 fish, or I might have caught 50 fish. If I can say, hey, I fished it really well, and I caught 7 fish today, that's all right. I feel good because I know that my skills have improved, and I learned something new, and I improved. That, to me, is real satisfaction.
When you say you fished it well, do you consider it like if your first 2 drifts are good versus if it takes you like 8 casts to make those 2 drifts, do you consider like you're fishing well when your first 2 casts hit the seam, hit everything that you want?
Yeah, right on. That's a very cool point. And it depends on what tactics I'm using, you know, but I feel like with a dry fly, yeah, I want to get it within the first 1 or 2. With a nymph, especially if my goal is just a nice pure strike zone ride, then yeah, it might take me 3 or 4 drifts through, let's say, a kind of a complicated seam with many cross currents and whatnot. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, and with a streamer, hey man, as long as I get real close to that structure, you know, I might be satisfied and say, hey, I fished that well. I landed within inches of where I was trying to be. Is that what you feel like too, Bill?
Yeah, I feel like days that I'm off, like I'm like a section that I might fish that I'm like, okay, I should hit that spot, you know, with 5 really good casts. And if it's taken me 15 casts to get the drift that I want, I start to get frustrated with myself. Like, hey, I'm not fishing as well because, you know, maybe I'm playing with leader formulas or playing with weights. And so.
And that's kind of an answer to Matthew's question as well.
Yeah.
If you're feeling frustrated, well, then you're probably not fishing well. Now, you might have improved from last time if you're not as frustrated as you were last outing. But when you're going to get to that point where you're going to feel not frustrated, you're going to feel pretty satisfied. Man, when you feel that, you know you did well and you know you're improving. But yeah, absolutely. The fish count is the thing. I mean, if you're catching fish, well, that there you go. I mean, if you're catching more fish than the last time out, that's probably improvement in most cases.
But even what you guys are saying is quantifiable, you know? You guys are talking about how many attempts is it going to take for me to get the right drift, and you can keep track of that. If you walk into a spot and say, it took me like 8 casts to learn this section, and so my first great drift was around 8 casts into this spot.
Yeah.
You can keep track of that. Next time you come in, if it takes you only 2 casts to get that perfect drift, then you're improving.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I mean, I think to sum it up, Matthew, I think we're all, at the end of the day, pick something to improve on and, you know, prior to your outing and keep working on it, right? And keep learning and keep working towards a specific goal, you know, that you can measure success, whether that's, you know, fishing it well or numbers or casting or tying knots quicker. But don't just go to the stream and walk in blind because, you know, I don't know how... that's going to pan out for you, you know, for the casual angler. If you want to take it to that next level, goals and some thought processes are going to be key. And I think we'll dive into that a little deeper here moving forward.
I think that's perfect. Have a reason, have something you're working on. That's a great tip. Imagine if someone put as much time, thought, and effort into designing fishing apparel as you put into finding fish. Well, someone did. Squalla Fly Fishing builds waders, jackets, shirts, and pants so well designed, dependable, and comfortable, you hardly notice them. When you're wearing Squalla, you're never hot or wet or unreasonably cold, so you can focus on more important things, like fishing. They don't make gear for everybody. They make gear for us, the like-minded few, serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Check them out at squallafishing.com. Then use the code TROUTBITTEN10, that's the number 10, for 10% off your first order from Squalla. Precision Fly and Tackle is a family-owned business with a passion for the outdoors and a sense of adventure. They are anglers who enjoy every moment spent on the water with family and friends. Precision Fly and Tackle carries the widest selection of Euro rods, reels, lines, leaders, flies, and accessories. From the beginner to the advanced angler, Precision Fly and Tackle can outfit every angler, no matter the budget. Visit them online at precisionflyandtackle.com. Then use code TROUTBITTEN10, that's the number 10, for 10% off your order. Gear up with Precision Fly and Tackle for your next adventure. All right, let's get to our topic, a fly fishing life and doing the hard things. A while back, I wrote an article on TroutBit entitled, How to Stay in the Fly Fishing Game for a Lifetime, because I meet a lot of people who say, yeah, I used to fish a lot, but then I kind of got out of it and I wish I hadn't quit. I hear it a lot. So no one ever tells me that they fish often enough or spend enough time on the water. There's always that simple wish to fish, to get out there more. And the only way it happens is with intention. Fly fishing in particular is hard. There's a little more gear to bring, more rigging, more knots, more to understand, especially if you want to be a complete angler or you want to meet the fish on their own terms. There are seemingly endless tactics and skills to develop, and that's why we love it. The depth and range of options can seem daunting. And really, the level of preparation and, again, intention necessary to succeed can surprise you if you aren't ready for it. Fly fishing for trout simply requires that we do the hard things. I say it all the time, right? Fish hard. And what we're here to talk about is exactly what that means. So how do we fish hard, guys? What are the things necessary to keep a fly fishing life?
For me, when I graduated college and decided to move to North Carolina, before I left, Dom told me, don't become one of those guys who used to fish a lot.
I remember.
And that kind of stuck in my head, and those words burned in me. So one of the things that I had to do in order to not become one of those guys who used to fish a lot was drive a lot.
Yeah.
And so travel became one of the ways I was able to fish hard and stay in it. Because if I didn't, or if I wasn't willing to travel, I simply was not going to fish, at least not for wild trout.
You were driving like how far on average?
Well, the closest wild trout was 1 hour away.
Yeah.
So
it was hard to do. You know, I couldn't just go out for a morning and come back. Mm-hmm. So I really had to, fight for it more or less.
Yeah. And you did plenty of couple hour, 2 hour trips, I remember, right?
Yeah.
Two plus to get to that other
stream. Just to make it worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't always have the trout right in the backyard like most of us do now.
Absolutely.
Or all of us.
I think I've reflected on this some in my own life, and I'm curious what you guys think, but I've never had more of a love for sleeping than I have for fishing. And that typically means I'm just so excited to get out fishing that I'm up at 4, can't sleep, getting my gear together. And I've always just enjoyed the early mornings and even the late evenings, but the mornings in particular.
Yeah.
And that goes for hunting too, because I do love to hunt a lot. But I wonder whether that comes from a genuine love for mornings, or I think for me, it's just a genuine love for fishing, you know? And I think that love for fishing, and once you get out there in the mornings and get to appreciate what's out there waiting for you, you start to love the mornings for that purpose too.
I feel like there is nothing more predictable in fishing than dawn, being pretty damn good.
For sure. Yep.
I received some good advice similar to what you were talking about, Austin. When we had our first kid, and I talked with my dad a lot about fishing growing up. I think I've talked about that a little bit. He kind of got me into it. He's a great fisherman, but he told me after we had our first kid, and I was kind of complaining about the lack of time that I had to fish. He said, he had a really specific line. He said he was actually leaving town, and like one of the last things he said to me as he was leaving town was, "Josh, I think here's what if I could give you one piece of advice, it's sleep less, fish more." And so it kind of became that same kind of thing, Trevor.
He was telling you to night fish. Yeah.
Well, that it certainly did turn into a whole lot more of that over the last couple of years, and that's made a huge difference. But we've talked about that some on this podcast with kids, and those are free hours. Nighttime is free hours. Really early morning are kind of free hours, and so it's just fish when you could be resting, fish when you could be sleeping.
That's a hard thing. Getting up early is a hard thing. It's still very hard for me. I spent 16 years as a musician who didn't get home till 12, 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. Austin, you know that.
Yeah.
I used to take you home sometimes.
That's right.
To your house.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
There's no sweetheart hole here.
The sweetheart hole.
And so living all those years on that schedule, my body still, it's only been since 2019 in December since I was done with my last gig as a musician. And all those years, my body still does not want to get up really early. And Josh, when we're filming, Josh is like, "Let's go. Like, let's be out there at dawn." I'm like, "I don't know about that." Because it's the end of the week, and I think of that day that we record as like my day off, but it's not. It's now part of the job almost to go film something, but it's cool. And the longer I am away from being a musician, the easier it gets. But my gosh, it is never easy for me to get up before dawn so that I can actually be on the water at dawn. But like you said, Trevor, that reward. That feeling, it's all yours. We said 2 podcasts ago, if you really want space, go out at dawn. Stop complaining that everybody's out there at noon and get out there at dawn. Yeah, it's all yours.
Man, have we seen that too? We've been filming and we are nobody. Even on the best days, we are not running
most
into
popular spots
anybody until
right?
What?
11,
I went to a world famous river system this past weekend. And I fished until 10:30 until I saw another human fishing, and it was one person. And I was just like astonished. Like I was cherry picking like a champion.
Cherry picking like a champion.
That's making the outro.
That's fantastic.
Can we put that on a shirt? Cherry picking like a champion.
That's your job. You do that.
Oh, man.
That's fantastic. Struggling to get up. I think that's a good... A lot of people have that, right? And
it's hard.
I would say I was always a morning person, but boy, when you have kids, and you guys know, the whole morning person thing becomes even more challenging.
Yeah.
If you have a child that, doesn't sleep so well. But I think it's one of those things that I had to like almost sacrifice some other stuff.
Yeah.
During the week, like maybe I didn't go out to the brewery to meet my buddies for beers. Mm. And I was like, you know why? Because I'm going to get up at 3:30 and I need my like A-game on. Like, and it sounds silly, but I've done it a ton. Like, I've made those little choices and changes to not wake up with the excuse to say, oh, man, I had one too many. Well, one too many. If I know I got a day to fish, I never have one too many.
That's discipline.
Yeah,
it is. That's seeing ahead and saying, well, I'm going to do this now so I can have that payoff later. You're going to go to bed now so you can fish later. Because you know it's going to go the other way if you do have one too many. Yeah.
And how many of your buddies remember about the whole, I had my rant on showing up
late. Right. He says, don't be late.
I'm not going to be able to fish with anybody out here, but it's true. It's like, look, you decided to go out last night and I knew you were going out. So when I send you this picture of my namer in 2 hours.
While you're asleep.
Are you going to think twice? Well, dude, I can't tell you how many times I'm fishing and get the texts like, man, it'd be nice to go out today, blah, blah, blah. Here's a picture of a fly hanging out of a fish's mouth. So yeah, that morning, you know, like we hit touch base on it last week. You might give up some of the dry fly fishing. Some. I'm not saying all. I'm just saying you might give up some of the dry fly fishing. But if you're serious about catching fish at all costs and having solitude, well, those are back to the sacrifice thing. You might not be chucking, dry flies that early, but you know you can't have everything.
Yeah. Honestly, I admire every one of you for being those morning guys. You guys, none of you seem to have trouble with getting up before anybody else, up before the enemy, right? And getting out there, and there you are.
I feel like I have a trouble like sleeping. If I'm excited about fishing the next day,
that's cool.
I'm waking up every hour looking like, hey, can I get up? Hey, can I get up yet?
Wow.
And then finally, it's like, okay, it's 4 a.m. And like, all right, I'll just drive somewhere and it'll be like now it's like to the point where it's light and you can fish at 5:30 if you want to.
Days are longer.
And this is a guy that fishes 200 days a year. Right. Still has that excitement, which is cool.
That's cool. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think another thing that I often think about is it kind of piggybacks on what Grobe you're saying is don't despise these little opportunities that you have to engage in the sport, whether that means you get out for an hour or two, and don't despise the chance to get out, you know, by saying like, well, I don't have a whole day, so I'm just not going to go. Mm. For me with kids, sometimes my window of opportunity is nap time, or sometimes it's between nap time and dinner, you know, or it's after the kids are down and there's enough light in the sky that I can still fish the spinner fall.
Yeah.
And if I didn't take advantage of those opportunities, I'd have a whole lot less time on the water than I do. Mm-hmm. But even at home, like I will tie leaders, you know, while I'm playing with the kids, or I'll retie, or I'll tie a fly and have the kids engaged in it, doing a craft or something, you know? So there are more opportunities to do that kind of stuff than we think, if we have the right attitude.
Yeah. That's pretty cool, Trevor. I mean, I think this goes back to my whole fish resume thing. Like your 45 minutes that you chose to go to the stream is invaluable. I mean, this all comes down to time on the water and whether it's 45 minutes or 2 hours, you can't beat it, right, Dom? I mean, it's like, that's how you're going to get better. You're going to immerse yourself in all this knowledge that's out there and then try to execute out on the stream, but don't make excuses that, oh, well, an hour's wasted. No way. Go pick up some rocks and look at bugs. And Dom, you walk your kids on the stream all the time when they were little, right? So
you do all those things to sort of make it whatever it takes to keep fishing as part of your life. What we all do.
And it's going to make you a happier person. And a much nicer person to be around so that you're not, yelling at three guys on a river because you haven't been out in a couple weeks.
Right. Since 2010, Smith Creek, New Zealand has provided innovative, high-quality angling solutions designed to free up your hands, keep your gear in easy reach, and keep our waters clean. Smith Creek's award-winning rod clip attaches to your vest and grips a variety of rod sizes, freeing up your hands to tie a fly, change a hook, or release your catch. All Smith Creek products are built guide tough, using high-quality materials like anodized marine-grade aluminum, non-corrosive fasteners, and UV-resistant nylon. To learn more about other innovative products, such as the patented net holster, spent line wrangler, or rod rack, visit smithcreek.co. That's smithcreek.co.
Tactical Fly Fisher was started in 2015 by Fly Fishing Team USA angler Devin Olson, with a mission to bring American anglers the techniques and gear that dominate the international competitive fly fishing scene. While you may have no desire to compete, you can still benefit from the same strategies which competitive anglers use to make them more successful on the water. Whether you want to buy your nymphing rod, a stillwater fly line, or just some hooks and beads to fill your fly box, we've got you covered. And our teaching materials will help you learn how to use whatever products fill up your cart. Head on over to tacticalflyfisher.com and use the code TFF10 to get 10% off flies, fly tying supplies, or terminal tackle.
So yeah, you want to be having this fly fishing life, so you do. You incorporate your kids and you tie in flies and maybe tie in leaders and looking at bug books or taking them out like I did. I was daytime dad, so I took the boys when they were really young. And we seriously would just go for hikes along the rivers because I loved being there. And I also liked the idea of that I was just exposing them to those environments and the sounds of a river and the smells of a river and turning over rocks. And and I learned a lot with all that. Even most days, we were not even fishing when they were real young. And yeah, you do those things just to keep it part of your life, even if you can't have a rod in your hand. But then every time you can have a rod in your hand, I like what you said there, Trevor, even if you only have a short time, even if it's not perfect. I think this goes along with a lot of the things that we're talking about. Even if it's not a perfect scenario, so what? It's pretty good.
It is.
Yeah.
Right. It's pretty good. So you go do it. And I think a lot of people are waiting for that, the perfect weather. They're waiting for that, I don't like to just go for 2 hours. I want to have a full day, so I'll just wait.
Right.
No, go fish. You have 2 hours. Go ahead, do it. If you got
excellent
something nearby.
Yeah. And pretty much just what you said, the conditions shouldn't be an excuse not to go. So I feel almost the whole end of winter into the whole spring, I've been fishing high water and popular accesses and working really hard to get into places that people are scared to go to
because
they see the gauge is high.
Yes.
But if you're willing to work and search and find the fishable channels or islands that you can still get into, you could have it all.
And have some good fish.
It's a good point, Austin.
I guided the last 2 days. The water was high, very high yesterday, and then coming down today, but still very high. And we got rained on really hard yesterday, but we were catching fish in the morning. And my guy was really really learning fast and excited, and it was cool. But each of us had sort of underdressed. So we went back. I said, hey, you're cold, right? I'm cold too. Let's go back to the parking lot, which is 10-minute walk. And when we got to the parking lot, actually the sun was just starting to come out. It was in and out of the clouds, but the sun was starting to come out. The rain had stopped. And here come people. It's almost noon. And two trucks pulled in. There's three guys in each truck. So six guys walked downstream. And they, we kind of casually said hi, whatever. By the time we finished our sandwiches and just kind of putting extra layers on and whatnot, I'm going to say 25 minutes. These people were coming back. And I didn't say anything because I didn't feel very friendly.
Kind of high down there, huh?
Right. My guy said something like, hey, how'd it go? And all six of them are like, no, you can't fish that. Well, you can't fish that. And somebody goes, he looked at him like he was stupid. And he goes, do you see that water? Do you see that water? And my friend says, yeah, we were catching fish out of it like an hour ago. And one of the other guys is like, no, I don't know. He just didn't believe us. Oh, no way. I don't care if he believes us.
That's
and whatever.
Okay.
Seriously, they took off. We went back downstream. Caught about five more fish in the afternoon. It was difficult. I'm not saying it wasn't, but there you go. An example, right? And you go fishing because you have the time. You go fishing, stop making excuses, do the hard things. It was hard water. It was challenging. Boy, we learned something.
Yeah, cool.
It'll make you a better fisherman. If you fish in any conditions, you're going to learn to adapt real quick.
For sure.
Yeah, very true. Just being willing to try.
Right.
So efficiency for me has been a real adaptation to this kind of lack or paucity of opportunity, mainly as a way for me not to dig out of my fishing time more. Mm-hmm. It's been bred by necessity, right? Because if I'm, and Bill witnessed this earlier this year, if I'm inefficient on the water, I hate that more than anything because yeah. I know I have limited opportunities. But I'm curious for you guys whether your efficiency has been kind of born out of that same, almost drive because of that lack of opportunities at times, or whether you just are efficient people to begin with and just enjoy that sense of kind of accomplishment.
I almost have to prep and make sure that I'm efficient. So like I'll notice that things start to get unorganized. And so one day I'm just going to say, okay, I'm going to spend an hour in my car and in my vest to just, I need to, let's organize stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that when I get on the water, I'm not searching for this or I'm not searching for that. Things need to be in their place ahead of time so that I don't feel like that.
That's good stuff, Bill. I think to kind of elaborate on the whole spreadsheet / journal thing that Dell and I do. I mean, if I get 2 hours now and I reference I have a shot to go to a stream and I know, you know, let's say Madison, my daughter's going to go down for a nap from 1 to 3. Well, this goes into the, from experience in countless outings on the river, I'm fishing March, I'm making this up, March 15th. I know the blue wing olive emergence is going to happen, you know, roughly at 3 o'clock. So when I get to the water and my rod's rigged, I'm going to have a size 18 pheasant tail on and I'm going to target the header riffles because I know those bugs are swimming into that fast water and they're going to emerge in 2 hours. And all of a sudden, I'm going to have a really good day because I cut all of the, trial and error out. But
the waste.
I earned that because you know what? I wasted a lot of time over the past 32 years of fly fishing, right? Yeah. And I can't harp on that enough, that 32 years fishing has given me that, I don't want to say that right, but that freedom to execute in that way because I put my work in.
You got the cheat codes. You got the cheat codes. You can take the warp whistle and get to the head of the run when the olives hatch and you're ready to go.
I like that, Bill. I like that a lot. But see, that's what it takes, though, right? I mean,
you got to put in the time.
Yep.
And then when you only have an hour to go fishing, before you approach the stream, as you're thinking like, oh, man, I'm getting off work here in a couple hours, you're starting to think, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? How am I going to fish? Because you only have an hour. You don't have time to figure things out. So you have to take your best guess before your boots even hit the water. Like you're saying there, Matt, you're going to have whatever, the olive hatch. So this is what you're going to focus on.
Sure.
That's cool.
It is. And it's... I spent most of my life in fishing in central PA. You know, I lived there for a couple years, but I was telling these guys before, when I came out here, I had to have the drive to do it all over again.
I know. I remember.
And it's like, wasn't catching fish in some of the spots I thought I should be catching fish. And I'm like, wait a minute. Here's why. Like, skills transfer, but you know, to learn a river, to really learn a river, you got to put your boots on the ground for 4 seasons. And I'm just starting 8 years. I'm just starting to learn it. Yep. And make it a little bit easier.
Little teaser. I'd say this was Bill's idea. Bill said, hey, let's do a podcast on learning a river, how to learn a river. Mm. That's what you're saying right there, right?
Absolutely.
Yet, it is a challenge. Let's do it next week. You know, so next week we're going to do
it.
A river. Yep.
Nice. When you had that experience of like, I've got a clean slate in Montana, some people would say I'm overwhelmed and it's too much and I'm just going to tap out. When I get in situations, like I guess the mindset that I'm in now is I like the newness of
challenge,
whether it be a new river, a new stream, a new tactic.
Yeah.
I feel like the longer you're in the game, you have the confidence to say, okay, I may not know the rivers, but I know what I need to do to learn those rivers.
Right on.
I mean, I think just that's my nature, is I don't typically fish the same stretch. We all know the guys that are going to go and they had good fishing on a certain stretch one day and they immediately want to go back the next day, right?
Sure.
How many of us know those folks? And look, there's certain situations that there's nothing wrong with that, right? If you're having fun, that's great. Mm-hmm. But like my mindset is I already kind of know that place. Like I fished it and I make rotations and I really try to fish X amount of new water every year. And then out here, if I park at a bridge and fished up last week. Well, I'm going to fish down this week.
Yeah.
And you're just building that resume, right? That you're learning more. And you, in my opinion, if you force yourself to fish like that, you just learn, you know, you learn a lot more.
Yeah.
Personally, I think. And I think we're all kind of like that to some degree.
Well, I think it's a really simple difference between the type of angler we're talking about who loves, they look at that as an opportunity and as an exciting pursuit, right? Plumbing the depths of all there is to know in fishing for wild trout, and not just wild trout, but wild trout within your state, within your region, within this set of streams. And the deeper you go, almost, the more you realize there's so much more to know. And if that excites you and that gets you kind of more interested versus just thinking like, it's kind of, I'd prefer something easier. I mean, there's always bobbers and worms and ponds around.
Yeah.
And you can spend your day doing that. But
I think if you want to grow as an angler, you have to make yourself uncomfortable.
Ooh, yeah.
If you know, if I go down to stream A and I hop in a hole and there's, if you do that every time you go fishing.
Yeah.
After the 10th time, you're not really learning anything.
Yeah.
And you're not going to have any new skills out of it.
You do want to be uncomfortable. That's cool. Yeah.
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 Everything is a little uncomfortable at first. None of us are new anglers. I think many of our listeners are not new anglers, but plenty are. And yeah, as a new angler, I remember everything being uncomfortable. I'm like, I can't even cast this thing. You know, I can't stay out of the trees. And so everything is difficult at first, but then, you know, all of a sudden, you have a good grasp on 90% of the stuff. And then you want to work on that 10% of stuff that you're not any good at. Maybe by now, most of us are pretty decent at 95% of the stuff, you know, but we're still all pushing ourselves to work on that 5%. And absolutely. I know
I like that a lot.
That's what entertains me. That's what drives me to continue to get back out there.
I feel like people are almost scared, right? To like, let's face it. If you have 7 to 10 days, and I don't know how many, what percentage of anglers have 7 to 10 days, or let's say they have 20 days a year to fish.
Yeah.
It's scary to go and fish something that might not produce when you know there's some class A streams that are world famous and there's nothing wrong with that, right? But you're not gonna, you know, all of a sudden, like the coin fish of a lifetime. Like, if you fish those same four streams, you know, for 30 years and you never caught a whiskey or something, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's probably not just that fish of a lifetime, like myth. It's probably because you haven't explored, right? Because there's some people that catch a fish of a lifetime 12 times a year. Like, right? I got another one, but that was a fish of a lifetime for 98% of the people. But like,
yeah, good point.
The 2% put the effort in to get that more. That's not just luck. That's dedication and hard work.
Right on. So we've talked a lot about the effort. Yeah, that effort to get out there earlier, that effort to explore, that effort to get out there even when we only have a couple hours, you know, that effort to prepare and think ahead. Yeah, that effort is a big deal. Well, effort carries over into this stuff too, but let's kind of do almost a rapid fire kind of thing here. Rigging, for example, if you can't tie knots, you're kind of in trouble out there. We talk about being a complete angler or somebody who says, well, let me try streamers. Oh, let me try wet flies. Let me try a dry dropper. Many people seem to avoid that because they go, I can't tie the knots. Well, that's on you. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's your fault. Trevor, you said it as directly as we possibly could way back in the efficiency episode. You're like, well, that you know, if you try harder, you know, you're going to be able to tie knots.
There's really no way around
99% of people can tie knots if you take that time. So that's one of mine. Like, you have to be good at rigging. That's hard. Understood. Yeah. We understand that. And yet each one of us has taken the time, very much off the water, to get good at our knots and to understand what we need to do to transfer over from a streamer rig to a dry dropper rig. And yeah, that might take kind of a wholesale change. But anyway, each of us can do it in a very short amount of time. Amount of time. So that's one of mine. Perfecting your rigging. Being able to do it quickly and efficiently.
Yeah.
That's hard, but it's something that we've all gone through and now we can do.
Another thing is just stuff, you know, gear we need. if you want to be in it for a lifetime, you're going to wear stuff out. Stuff you buy is going to eventually break.
Right.
And sometimes it can be annoying. Sometimes it can be fun. Sometimes it's fun to fix stuff. Sometimes it's not fun to buy new stuff. Right. Even tying flies, like, oh, I'm out of 16 hooks. Now I have to go find 16 hooks. So I don't have this size tungsten bead. That's really annoying. Yeah. But if you're willing to go ahead and just put your time and energy instead of in frustration, but in productivity, you know, you can make it a game and keep it fun.
That's an interesting thing about the fly tying. I can't tell you how many people I've gone out with that, like, their fly selection is store-bought and somewhat limited. And I feel like once you get into that whole game, you become much more well-rounded because your selection, and we all admit we're mostly generalists, but having said that, we still put that special touch on that general pattern. And guess what? Like, I'll go on a little rant here, but like, that goes back to the effort you put in, and so, you know, not all the time, but sometimes when people are asking for flies because you're smoking fish and they don't put the effort into doing it, boy, you have to pry some of that, as magic flies out of my hands, because I want to grip my teeth and be like, oh my gosh, dude, like, my daughter screamed for 4 hours last night, and I woke up 2 hours before I went to fish to put four of these in my box. And just because you can't find them at the store shouldn't mean I should give you them.
That's great. I earned these.
Blood, sweat, and tears.
I like
Matt's
that.
Doing the hard things.
Mm-hmm. Austin talked about gear. Like, I keep kind of like a fix-all type thing in my car that has like boot laces, that has extra studs, that has like UV seal, that just has like a little bit of everything, because I know
zip ties.
At some point, lots of zip ties. Yeah, right. And so at some point things are going to break down. And so you need that, you know, kind of patch mechanism to kind of keep you out on the water. Otherwise you're driving back home. Sometimes that's 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You don't want to waste the time that you do have out there fishing. Boy, you better be ready. And that's that preparation that we're talking about, which is kind of hard, but it becomes part of your life. Like you were saying, Austin, these are things that you just do. Yeah, I need tungsten beads. Darn it. You know, the place I usually buy them doesn't have that size. Oh, you know,
that's
now
a familiar story these days.
Right. Yeah, I got to order from three different places. I tried my local fly shop. They don't have the color that I need. Ah. All that stuff, right?
I hate paying shipping.
I know, right?
I think to Grobe's point, though, like, I think the thing that keeps us doing these hard things sometimes is that you see the rewards that you can reap when you've done the hard work and done things the harder way, and then you say, you know what, I can push a half mile more downstream because I have good boot studs in and I'm not slipping all over the place, or because I have, you know, I know the water downstream because I've been there three times before and I've pushed through and fished till it was a little bit past dark and when it wasn't comfortable to do it. And whatever those reasons may be, I think we've all reaped the rewards of difficult things in our fishing that have led to more fish or a good fish or even just a good experience and a good story and a good time with each other. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like we're not masochistic. We're not out just trying to do something hard with no reward to it, right?
Speak for yourself.
There's a lot of good to be had in this stuff.
When you get beat up, right, Trevor? Like,
yeah.
And Dom, we've talked about this, you and I personally about it, but you know me, like, I work out so I can walk that extra mile. And people are like, you know, you don't hear a lot of that in fly fishing, right? No. Like, people don't talk about the exercising and whatnot. And I'm like, why are you hiking up? You know, we have a local steep trail. Like, I walk up it 3 days a week so I can walk past you when I'm fishing. that's what drives me. That's like the motivation back to dedication and what allows me to have more time on the water than maybe someone else. You know, I set myself up for that, right? I'm going to wake up at 4.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm groggy, but I'm going to perform, so to say, a little better, but I put in a lot of work to get to that point.
I think there's a lot of correlations between what we're talking about and what athletes do, right? And I think I don't think it's a stretch to say that. And you look at how preparation is really moved into, I think 50, 60 years ago, it looked a lot different in athletics, but nowadays all the way from nutrition to training, to gear, to mental preparation. And we're talking about all these different aspects that are things that NFL players do, that PGA Tour players do, that.
Huh. And we're pretty much NFL players.
Pretty much.
Same that thing. Is where I'm going.
Same thing.
Yes. I get what you're saying, Trevor. You're saying
high performance.
It's everything in life has to point to it. If you want to perform,
and why not? At the best. And why not look at the people doing these types of things at the highest level and say, yeah, there's good reason they're doing those things. We've been doing these things in fly fishing kind of in a separate world, but they're all for that same purpose, to perform in the best way that we can.
It's not for everybody, right?
Like, no, that's fair.
And that's fine. Like, and this is extreme. This goes back to, trout bitten for life. Like, this is kind of where our mindsets are. If you get out there in 5-7 times a year and enjoy that, awesome. Right. But we're talking to all the people that want to get better and are sending us emails, Dom, your emails, and looking at your website and are thriving to get better. Yeah. These are all just things that can help everybody do that.
So I'm dealing with my sciatic nerve acted up because I got lazy and I stopped doing stretches and I stopped stretching that out walking. And so now I had to come home a day early from a fishing trip because I just couldn't stand. Like, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't sit, and it just hurt. And so, now I'm paying for being a slacker.
It might, this fly fishing life, well, it might motivate you, right? To,
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that made me probably the maddest I've been is because I finally got to go to a river that I've been wanting to go in six years. And now I had to come home early.
Well, so, you missed a day, right?
Yeah. I missed a day.
Bill, this reminds me of Sloop, actually.
I was talking to him. Yeah. Well, I was talking to him this week about it.
Back to Sloop.
Last time I was, hey there, Slooper. Yeah. Last time I was out in Montana, he and I went and fished. And, we were figuring out what time to get up in the morning. And we figured out what time it was. And he's, well, I'll be up 15 minutes earlier than that because I have to do my stretches.
I was like, awesome.
What? Yeah. And he said, I got to stretch. All right, man. Cool.
Yeah.
But he was a perfect example of that. He stayed in it for life, you know?
He was. I picked on him and he's like, I went fishing with him once and he sent me the text and he's like, you changed it for me. He's like, I had to go sit on the bank because I couldn't fish and you caught a whiskey. And he's like, it just killed me. Cause I was like, I was fish that run. And he's like, nah, he's like, I got to go sit down. And I caught a big fish out of the run. And He's like, since then, he's like, it's motivated me. And he's like, I went to the PT and he had the same type of thing, like back problems and stuff.
Yeah, so sure.
I need someone to catch a big fish in front of me while I'm sitting on the banks, I guess.
We all volunteer.
Just show me where the big one is.
Just tell me where to fish, Bill.
Throw it up there behind that boulder.
What else, guys? What else?
Yeah, so I spend a fair amount of time researching and reading. And I think it's partly just my personality, but in any sport or interest that I've had, and fly fishing is one of the main areas that I've done this. I really have consumed and read a lot of the books that are written and that are out there that are older and newer about what we do. Yeah. And some have related more and some less to exactly the type of style and way that we fish. But I also like to read a lot about just the entomology and the biology of the fish and the fishery science. And not a time goes by that I'm out fishing that I don't think about or reference something that I've read in my life about fly fishing or trout or bugs or entomology. And I think that that's cool. And I think it's one of the things that I like about how much information goes into the decisions we make on the water and how much you can really aid your game by learning. And I think this podcast is a great resource for people to listen to as well, because this can be another source of that information. And gosh, your depth of articles on your site, Dom, is just another great resource for people to pour through. There's no reason that if you want to get better at fly fishing and fishing the monorig, that you shouldn't read every article on there. Watch all of Josh's videos, watch everything you can, and assimilate that all into your armoire of your
armoire
armoire
assimilate it all into your armory
Mr. Big Word slipped up.
Good I don't stuff. Know. Put it all into your toolbox of things you can use on the water.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, research of locations, research of tactics.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, why all not? That stuff. Learn everything you can. Somebody else has done this.
Yes. I had a guy email me the other day wanting to know, like, hey, you know, about those big trout. Like, where do you catch those big trout? I mean, we all get that email, don't we? We all get that Instagram message.
I used to a lot.
Nice fish. Hey, where'd you catch that one? Where'd you catch the big one? And I really wouldn't even mind telling some people sometimes, some places. You need to earn it, right? It's and what we're saying is put in the hard work. And then, and really, it would almost be a disservice if I said, well, I caught it right here. Here's the GPS coordinates. Here's the exact way I approached it. And here's the fly. Go ahead.
Yeah.
No.
You go.
Because the reason I appreciate that last big trout that I caught is because I did put in the time. And it is this hard work. It's the research to find the spot. It's the research to understand the tactics, like you're saying there, Trevor. That's a huge part of what we're doing here.
Sure.
That stuff is hard.
Does that bug you guys? I mean, because that happens to me all the time. Yeah. Like, as far as like asking for information and it goes into, like I said, what were you using? Where were you at? And I'm just like, part of me, the older I get, gets a bigger chip on my shoulder because of all the blood, sweat, and tears you put into learning that yourself. And I'm less likely to give it up unless it's someone, you know, who... Like it's you guys the same on, thing. On this, right? Like I could, I'd have no issues, right? Because I know you guys have put your time in. Yeah. And, but it's like some other folks, it's like, look, how about you just go to the river and let me know what you came up with? Like just stop overthinking it.
Right. Yeah, right. I don't know if it bugs me anymore. I don't know if it frustrates me at people. I just kind of chuckle. I'm like, yeah, that's just not how it works. And you wouldn't enjoy it if people did give you all the information that you think that you want right now. Because that's not how you go catch the big ones. If you want to go catch a big one, go fish a private club. There you go. They stocked it for you. They fed it, you know, for 50 days. And there you go. Go catch them. If that's the most important thing to you is just have a big fish, well, let's make it easy for you, you know?
Yeah.
And we don't want to do that.
When you start talking about research and stuff, like I spend so much time on Google Maps and like the PA Boat and Fish. And like today I pulled up the map and I was looking at it and I was just like, man, I like, sometimes I feel like, wow, I fished a lot of streams. And then I look at like that whole northern tier of PA where I feel like, man, there are just hundreds of streams there that I have not even tapped into that. Like, it's exciting because it's like, wow, there's still a lot more there to learn and to figure out.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It is exciting.
Yeah.
Making those plans for the future.
I don't know about you guys, but like my Google Maps is just full of like just pins.
Pins. Explore this.
Yeah.
Try that on the next camping trip, right?
Yep.
Hey, anything else, guys?
Sure. Now, Dom, you had enlightened me on this at the early stages. No, is that bad?
No, that's fine. I don't know. Okay. How much enlightening do I do? I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know about that.
Maybe brought to the surface.
Okay.
Okay. About life choices in the sense of where you live.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. And I don't know if you remember this.
This I understand. Yeah.
But back in the day, you chose to live in an area that allows you to fish.
Yeah.
A lot more than if you may have lived somewhere else in Pennsylvania, right?
Right.
And I hear the number one thing I hear from people is, well, you know, I don't have the time. And I get that. Like, you know, Bill, you're a monster. You get after it. But, you know, some people have, you know, maybe more responsibilities that may drag them away from being able to travel all the time. Yeah. But at the end of the day, you know, you can put yourself into a position to make fishing a lot easier if you choose to live in a place that has a lot of wild trout and that opportunity just will increase.
Good point. Yeah. Really good point.
I don't think that's over the top or extreme at all. I mean, that's how I got back here.
Yeah. And Austin, it was the coolest thing I ever saw. You went down because the job took you there in North Carolina and it's fantastic. You kind of did all that for a little while. And I just always knew, I just always felt like you were going to come back because you said this is where you wanted to be. And here you are. You know, it's the most exciting thing, really, that I've seen in a long time. I was, Austin's coming back. It's the coolest. And there, here you are.
Here I am.
Well, could you guys, could anybody be in a spot that didn't give you quick access to fishing?
Right, good question. No, not anymore. No. Mm-mm. And for the last 20 years, no, not anymore.
I think it would have to be some sort of fishing, whether it be fly fishing, spin fishing. Like, I've fished, like, I have a pond in my backyard still, and so I've just grown up, like, being on the water and fishing, you know, since I was old enough to walk. And so if I didn't have some way to fish and to get out of the house and to just relieve stress, like, yeah, I'd be a mental case.
You really got hooked at a young age, Bill.
It's part of your life.
Yeah.
Hey, Josh, what did we miss? Anything?
Nope.
I have one comment.
Very thorough. Austin, please.
I had one of my buddies, this kind of funny timing. He texted me earlier this week and he said, you ever have anybody like tell you that fishing is your hobby and like you almost get offended being like, no, it's more than a hobby. And I thought about that. Right. It's like, yeah, you know, you're right. It's more of like a requirement for living than it is a hobby.
Right.
And those who spend a lifetime on the water view it and can't help but feel it as a requirement of living.
Yeah.
Fish, therefore I am.
A hobby is so much more casual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like collecting baseball cards. But anything that's considered a hobby. Like
collecting baseball
cards. But any of that has like depths of it. Like if you.
True.
Like if you're really serious about, you know, whether it's collecting baseball cards or anything, you can make it. I guess I have the most respect for people that are really passionate about something. It doesn't have to always be fishing, but there's something in their life that they're very passionate about. Like maybe it is collecting baseball cards or hunting or something like that.
Hey, one of my questions to people, just in casual conversation, I don't want to talk about the weather. So I just will say, hey, what are you passionate about? What do you love in life? And I guess that's kind of been a bold question through the years. As a musician, I during set breaks, I was always talking to people. And I would ask them that. What are you passionate about? What do you really love in life?
You'd be surprised by how many people, I bet, have never been asked that.
Sure.
And probably don't spend a lot of time thinking about it.
Sure. And that's what I'm going to say, too. So often, I would kind of get, like, people were kind of taken back by the question, and then they didn't have an answer. And I kind of felt sad for them. And that's okay, and I hope that they've found something by now. What I'm saying is, we all have this thing we're very passionate about. It's part of our life. Fly fishing is a very big part of our life. And many people I would ask that question, what do you love? What are you passionate about? And they'd kind of look at me and pause. And I swear, a number of times people would say, I really like that one show on TV.
Ouch.
I like my shows. And I mean, I like my shows, you know? And I guess, okay, cool. You know? And if you really love it, whatever. I don't understand it. But perhaps they're actually feeling the same depth. I doubt it.
I think, you tried.
I'm trying to be nice about it, right? I don't get it. I don't get how you could have the same depth of experience and drive and passion. And it, we're out in this environment and we're participating in the environment. I think fly fishing is better than hiking because you're in it. You're holding the fish. You know, this is something that we love because of everything about it. And I don't think you're going to get that same depth because you really like this show on television. Yeah. And so I'm thankful for what we have and the friendships here, seriously. And we didn't even mention that, but that's
for sure
obviously a big reward of it. The connections you have with people and with nature.
Well said.
Yeah.
One thing I'll say is, to me, it's never about hunting like fish size. It's just being about, like, most days I'm just as happy as to go fish a brook trout stream that is 10 foot wide that I can fish for miles versus, you know, going trophy hunting. Just because if you do one of those for a long period of time, you kind of get burnt out on it. So, like, if you want to be in it for the long run, don't do the same thing consistently. Switch it up, whether it be different types of fishing, different streams.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, there it is. A fly fishing life and doing the hard things. So is any of it really that hard? Well, yeah. Yeah, it is. And that's sort of the point. Rising before dawn, filling the fly boxes, patching waders, replacing boot studs, driving long distances, exploring water that may not hold trout, and working on tactics that give us troubles are the hard things in this game. Maybe none of it is all that enjoyable by itself, but when we do these things as part of our fishing life, when we prepare, plan, and improve with intention, then the rewards that follow reveal themselves with ease. Surely, most anglers who pick up a fishing rod have no idea what they're getting into. It's a hobby at first, but after a few days on a flowing trout stream, after a few fish caught and a challenge is met, the allure of trout fishing on a fly grabs hold of us. The depth of experience out there is hard to match. The options available, the ability to tailor your experience to the types of waters that you enjoy best, is unique among outdoor pursuits. So maybe the sports analogy really is the best one here, because as soon as we start wishing for more, once we start planning for the next river, the next tactic, and the next experience, then doing the hard things becomes necessary and evident. Like an athlete, we learn and then refine the basics. We establish our baseline. Then we tackle the next steps with intention, with research, some planning, and hard work. And the rewards are in that work. The enjoyment is the journey. But it's also pretty sweet to be standing midstream among the best hatch of the season with a precision casting stroke carrying the fly into the ring of every rise. Set the hook, and you know that you've earned it. Prepare, practice, and enjoy the payoff. Thanks again for your support, everyone. If you like these podcasts, then find the latest addition to the Trout Bitten Project over on the YouTube channel. I think you'll enjoy it. Austin, will you read us out?
Yeah. All right. So remember, troutbitten.com is a free resource for all anglers. With over 800 articles, there are stories, commentaries, tactics, tips, and more. Find what you like through the top menu and through the search page. Navigate by way of the categories and the tags, too. Thank you for listening to the Trout Bitten Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and leave us a comment, because it really helps. Until next time, friends, fish hard, enjoy the day, and find your life on the water.
All you got to do is say, hey, man, this isn't a sweetheart hole.
I know.
He sweetheart holed me.
I know.
You got the cheat codes. You can take the warp whistle and get to the head of the run when the olives hatch and you're ready to go.
And there's nothing wrong with that, right?
And I was just like astonished. Like I was cherry picking like a champion.
I know. I know. I know.
Hey, where'd you catch that one? Where'd you catch the big one?
I know.
Hey, now.